What's going on, everybody? It is that time again. The Sooners Illustrated Podcast, episode 261 on this Monday, April 6th, 2026. Josh Calloway, Tom Green here with you. Spring camp a little bit. It's about halfway through at this point. Spring game coming up next weekend. What's the most intriguing, interesting position battle going on with this team right now that they still have to sort out? Tom and I are going to discuss on the show today, and then we'll, of course, hit some other sports as per usual. Men's hoops lost in the Crown Championship. We'll react to all of that. We'll hit the diamond as well, softball and baseball, kind of different weekends for those two teams, so we'll dive into those sports as well. It's a busy multi-sport Monday as per usual on the show today. Before we get started, you can subscribe to Sooners Illustrated at oklahoma.247sports.com. Use the promo code SoonersPod60, all one word, for listening on podcast. That gets you 60% off a VIP membership. Sooners Illustrated, the entire 24/7 Sports Network for an entire calendar year. Take advantage of it. Be with us every single day. Middle of spring camp, summer coming up, recruiting picking up. Also, Diamond Sports are rolling. Hoop portal opens tomorrow, so be along with us every single day over there at Sooners Illustrated. All right, Tom, let's get into it. We have not had any media stuff since the last time you and I did a show last Tuesday, as far as spring camp goes. That's going to change this week. We get back on the saddle tomorrow night. Brent Venables scheduled to speak with the media along with some more players. And Thursday, we're allowed to attend practice again. We'll talk to more guys there as well. Colin and I will probably kind of wrap up a lot of that stuff on Friday. But obviously, spring camp still in full swing. You've had lots of coverage over on the site, lots of content every day. I kind of just read some stuff. I kind of got to thinking a little bit, like, what is the biggest question position-wise on this team right now? What's the position battle that's the most interesting? There's a few that jump out to me. I wanted to pose the question to you. We have not discussed this beforehand, so I don't know where you're going to go. You don't know where I'm going to go. But, you know, just – obviously, it's a spring. You're going to have the whole off, the whole summer, the whole fall camp as well. Nothing going to be decided necessarily right now. But for you, I'll throw it to you first. What's the most interesting spot right now that you could see multiple guys vying for? And, you know, it's kind of up in the air and it's ongoing right now. I mean, you're battling it out in spring as we speak. Where's your mind go first?
To me, I'm not sure that there's necessarily a starting spot that, like, the battle really intrigues me. I think the position that I'm most interested in seeing how the rotation shakes out, and really, like, it's a battle in the spring because the two starters are out, is defensive tackle. Because you don't have David Stone and Jaden Jackson available, you're seeing a lot of these newer guys, these younger guys, whether it's, you know, Nigel Smith and Trent Wilson, Bishop Thomas, you know, Tank Carrington. Those four have been the primary guys on the inside this spring. And I'm really intrigued to see just kind of how it shakes out between those guys and, like, who's going to rise to the top. Because we know that when David Stone and Jaden Jackson are healthy, they're your two starters. Like, those are bona fide first-round guys in all likelihood. But when you look at what Oklahoma had on that rotation last year, where you essentially had four starting caliber players in the middle of your defense with Grayson Halden and Dominic Williams, who's going to step up among that second tier of guys who, you know, either didn't play last year or weren't here last year?
Yeah, no, that's a good call. I wasn't sure where you're going to go with it. And I, you know, kicking outside of the edge, there's some conversation there certainly as well with the other edge outside of Taylor Wine. I kind of sidestepped that one a little bit because it is a battle, in my opinion, between Danny Okoye and PJ Adebore. It's really a battle if one guy's out right now. Right. I mean, it is a battle, but it's, like, not in the sense that typically, but that is a convo. And I think one of the more intriguing, I mean, starting spots on the team right now is who that other edge is across from Taylor Wine. For me, on offense is where I kind of go, and it's the right side of the offensive line. You know, that right tackle slash right guard between Foje, Amarian Harris, and Heath Ozaida. You know, that kind of musical chairs there that we've talked about, because I think at the end of last season, we just assumed you swap out Fabecchi, you put in Ozaida, that's probably your five, but they went and they got a legitimate option from the SEC in Amarian Harris. And the more that this has gone on, the more it's felt like he could very well be the guy at right tackle. And if that's the case, just Foje just automatically bump in and become your guard on that side? Or is it Heath Ozaida, who has been around and by all accounts is having a good camp? So just that kind of it's three guys for two spots sort of a thing. Like, where, how does that shake out? And the reality is that all three are probably going to play early in the season, barring, you know, health and that sort of thing. But I'm very interested in what that kind of looks like, because I think, you know, Michael is your guy at center. Fasus is your guy at left tackle, EPL at left guard. But that right side is – there's some things to be sorted out there. So I'm very interested in the offensive line on the right side right now with those three guys.
Yeah, I think, like, assuming health, I think that Ryan Foje is going to be your right guard and Amarian Harris is going to settle in at right tackle. But, you know, Ryan Foje is a little dinged up right now. And it's like, what does Hito Zaida do with that opportunity with Ryan Foje, you know, dealing with, I think it's a knee injury. It looked like he was wearing a brace when we were out there. He got banged up about 10 days ago in practice. It's that first Saturday. So what does Hito Zaida do there? Because look, he's still settling in at right guard after playing on the left side, you know, his first couple seasons or his first few seasons here. So again, I think assuming health, Ryan Foje is your guy and Amarian Harris is there, but it gets really interesting because you do have that versatility. Like, I think that, you know, Hito Zaida is going to be probably your primary backup at both guard spots right now. Whereas if anything were to happen to Amarian Harris, Foje kicks out to right tackle and you slot Hito Zaida in their right guard. And it's good to have that flexibility and that optionality between them. But yeah, I think there is a little bit of a battle there, especially, you know, if Ryan Foje, you know, misses, you know, a little bit more time this spring and Hito Zaida just kind of asserts himself there.
For sure. And, you know, the reality too, and I kind of halfway mentioned it when we bring up health, is that these things tend to kind of work themselves out sometimes. Not that you're rooting for someone to get injured by any means. You want everyone to be full health, but the reality is someone might miss a little time in fall camp and it puts them behind. And then again, these things tend to kind of work themselves out sometimes, but a little bit of a logjam there, which is a good thing for Oklahoma. A couple other ones for me real quick. I mean, they're not necessarily position battles per se, but just kind of at running back, like the hierarchy there, the pecking order. I mean, we had, you know, they scrimmaged last week. Our great Colin Candy over at Sooners Illustrated had the scrimmage notes, and again, subscribe, you get access to all that stuff. But you know, I've certainly heard as much. I'm sure you have as well. We've talked about it throughout. Jonathan Hatton looks awesome, having a great camp. Xavier Robinson, Tori Blaylock are both banged up. Lloyd Avant had himself a pretty nice scrimmage, it sounds like. Just, you know, and again, it's not really a position battle as much as just like, how does the rotations go there? We also have a new coach there with Dylan McCullough. Like, there's a lot of kind of unknowns at the running back spot right now. You would assume full health, X Rob and Blaylock are your top two, but I don't think necessarily. Like, I do think Jonathan Hatton has a chance to factor in, and I don't know where Lloyd Avant fits in. I don't mean that in a negative way. I just don't know. I mean, as far as what's realistic to expect from him, and again, having a nice camp, it sounds like he's healthy, which is big. Availability is a big part of this. And so running back is very interesting to me too, just kind of the pecking order there. And it sounds like Hatton and Avant in particular are taking advantage of the fact that X Robin and Blaylock are on the shelf right now.
Yeah, Lloyd Avant is really interesting to me. You know, Ben Arvuckle kind of, you know, referred to him as like the savvy vet in the room. Like, even though he's in the same class as Xavier Robinson, it's just, he's played a lot more football over the last 2 years at Tulsa and at Colorado State. And if he can run the ball violently, as Ben Arbuckle said that Dylan McCullough is trying to get these guys to do, I'm really intrigued by him because he's probably your best pass catching back of that group right now. Just in terms of what he brings to a kind of a jack of all trades type guy. But if he can be more consistent as a downhill runner in this system, I'm really interested to see what that role looks like for him. Because look, I think they're going to be using multiple backs again this year. But what that rotation looks like, what the, you know, who gets the lion's share, I think is still very much up in the air, especially with, you know, Tori Blaylock out this spring with Xavier Robinson banged up. It's like, who's going to rise to the top?
For sure. No, it's going to be fun to watch shake out. And just, you know, with McCullough in there, there's just a lot of new and a lot of unknown at that spot. A couple other ones real quick as well that just aren't as, you know, I don't even know the right word, you know, spicy to talk about, but they matter, certainly. Punter. I mean, Grayson Miller, all SEC back, but they do have Jacob Ulrich back. And obviously, you remember, I'm not telling you anything you don't remember, but Jacob Ulrich was the guy to start last year, if you recall. He's still here. I have to think that he's battling for the job. If, I mean, it would have been very easy for him to portal out. Just kind of context clues of, he's back. Grayson Miller had a good year. He was all SEC, but was not great down the stretch, especially in the playoff game. Obviously, I wonder, is that a battle? I tend to think it is. And then the other one, which, you know, you hope doesn't matter, but is reality. You wrote about this week, QB2. I mean, yep. Is Bo Bentley automatically the backup? Is it Whit Neubauer? And look, the reality is that under Brent Venables, they've needed their backup quarterback a lot. And you hope that they don't. And I'm not, I say under Brent Venables, I don't mean to suggest it's something Brent is doing, but it's just the reality. I mean, in these last four seasons, they've needed, whether it was Davis Bevel, Michael Hawkins, obviously last year, a little bit of Michael Hawkins was material with Jackson Arnold, in Provo, a couple. I mean, it's happened a lot. And so it kind of is important on who the backup quarterback is. Curious to see if Bo Bentley earns that job or if they want to go with the older guy and Whit Neubauer. And just, you know, that's a little bit of an interesting thing as well. You know, again, you hope it doesn't matter, but the reality is it has the last couple of years. The backup has had to play or even start games in recent history for Oklahoma. So another little interesting storyline there that's certainly playing out right now.
Yeah, I was going to mention the backup quarterback spot because even though you hope you don't need them, the reality is that Oklahoma has needed them in key spots and at times for starts each of these last 4 years. And, you know, that's just kind of the world that you're living in when, you know, you're running your quarterbacks. You know, again, even last year, like John Mateer's injury did not happen on a run play. He just happened to hit his thumb on Keldrick Fultz's helmet on a throw. Hopefully, you know, you hope John Mateer can stay healthy, but, you know, there might be times where he might even need to come out for a series because his helmet comes off or something like that, or a couple plays. Mm-hmm. Who do you turn to then? You know, we've heard really good things about Bo Bentley, especially after kind of getting his feet settled like early on, you know, come in as a true freshman, you're kind of wide eyed, trying to catch up to the speed of the game and everything, but he's got some obvious talent, as a 4-star guy out of Texas, played a lot of high level ball there. But I mean, I would not discount Whit Neubauer at this point. Again, there's not a lot of experience in that room, but Whit Neubauer is the only guy that has any, even if it was at the FCS level at Mercer. You know, he did some good things as a true freshman there, and, you know, his skill set's a little bit different than everybody else in that room. You know, he's a little bit more of a pocket passer, but it seems he has good speed from what we're hearing. He's also got just a live arm. We heard even John Mateer talk about it, you know, early in the spring. He's like, yeah, man, sometimes like I take my rep and then I'm back there watching and I see Whit Neubauer go, and it's like, man, he's got a bigger arm than I do. So I wouldn't rule out Whit Neubauer like being able to win that QB2 job, but I think in an ideal world, Bo Bentley emerges as your backup and you can kind of groom him to be the guy after John Mateer.
Yeah, I tend to think that if you made them write up a depth chart today, I think probably would be Whit Neubauer. And what's funny is that they're totally different guys. Obviously, Bo is not the biggest guy. He's a high school kid. I mean, in terms of age, it's still a high school senior, right? And, you know, we saw in the practice we were at last week, him doing some run stuff, very athletic guy. I mean, his profile, a lot of people say it's kind of like John Mateer's. Whit Neubauer's huge, big, tall dude who can just kind of, you know, he stands out at practice, sort of a type of a guy. And so they're not really the same profile in that regard. I don't know if that plays in at all. It's kind of just, I don't know. It's very it's an interesting conversation. We haven't really seen Whit Neubauer play. I mean, outside of just throwing around in practice, they didn't have a spring game last year. It wouldn't have mattered. He wasn't here yet. Who was the Cole Gonzalez was the guy then. He ends up portaling and landing at Pittsburgh. That's when they added Whit Neubauer in the summer last year. And obviously, he never really. Did he ever throw a pass last year? I don't think he did. And so
he had a few, but like
just like cleanup duty.
Mostly cleanup duty. There's a couple times where he had to come in because, again, like, you know, John Mateer's helmet came off and he had to come in for a play because they didn't want to burn Michael Hawkins' red shirt and those spots. And that brings me to another point. It's like we've seen in two of the last 3 years where they've wanted to maintain the red shirt for their back, you know, for their backup quarterback, whether it was, you know, Jackson Arnold, they would have liked to maintain that in 2023, but had to burn it because of the concussion of Dylan Gabriel last year. You know, they wanted to preserve Michael Hawkins' red shirt and they were able to do that. So do they try to take that approach with Bo Bentley where, you know, maybe you get him some playing time where you can, but in a pinch is Whit Neubauer, like, do you trust Whit Neubauer enough to go in there and run this offense?
Yeah, I would bet so. I would think so. You know, very similar to what we saw last year in that. Yeah, if you can get Bo out there for like a quarter in the opener, per se, you know, Illinois State or whatever, worth it. But end of games or John has to miss a play, I would think that'd be Witt most of the year. That's just guessing, right? I mean, that seems to be the logical move there. So we'll see. Some fun spots to keep an eye on. Again, none of the really, I mean, I say many of these, really probably none of these in reality are going to be settled now. You have the whole summer, obviously, and then fall camp coming up. But some fun spots to kind of keep an eye on. And spring's kind of winding down. I mean, spring game is next weekend already. And we're looking forward to getting there and seeing this team. But more spring camp coverage to come. Again, Brent Venables is going to talk tomorrow and more players throughout the week. And we're going to get to be at practice again on Thursday. The access has been really, really quite good this month. So shout out Brent Venables, Mike Houck, everyone that's helped get that, because we've been at practice. That'll be the fourth time going out to practice. And
fourth time in 2 weeks.
Second time Brent's talked. Third total, if you want to go back to the start of spring. I mean, that's, you know, that's not overlooked that. I mean, that is, you know, very, very nice. So
yeah, especially when you think back to last year, we heard from Brent before the first practice and didn't hear from him again until after the Crimson Combine. So
yeah,
a little bit different, even though, you know, we got plenty of players and stuff like that during the spring last year, but it just feels like we're getting a little bit more this year.
For sure. Access has been really good. So more to come, another busy week of spring camp coverage. And then again, next weekend is the spring game. Looking forward to getting down to Norman for that. Hopefully weather holds up. Last weekend was rainy. This weekend, I think it's going to be rainy again. So please just be nice next weekend. The Sooners Illustrated Podcast will be back after this short break. All right, let's get into some other sports. Busy weekend again. It's going to slow down a little bit now because basketball is finally over, like the longest basketball season ever, because they played into April in the crown.
Now the portal's opening.
Now the portal's opening, of course. So we've made it to the offseason. Oklahoma played in the crown last week in Las Vegas. They lost in overtime at the championship game to West Virginia. They beat Colorado in overtime. They then pretty much rolled over Baylor, played really well. That was their best game of the week. And then West Virginia, you know, Tom, West Virginia came out insanely hot from three. They made seven of the first nine, or up 15 points. But Oklahoma weathered the storm, had that big 21-2 run. Looked like they were going to win. I mean, I'm sitting there with, you know, 7-8 minutes left thinking, man, they're going to win the crown. They're going to have won 9 of their last 10 games and win a postseason tournament for the first time in program history if they had won. And it just, you know, old bad habits got them at the end. Some bad possessions, some bad turnovers, some bad fouls. They blow a lead at the end of regulation. They blow a lead in overtime and they lose. We'll go, you know, big picture, and they've already made a big change to their structure of the program that we'll talk about in a second as well. But your reaction to the week in Vegas and the loss on Sunday is what? Because it was just kind of – it was a good week until it wasn't. And it just – you know, it was mostly good. But the way it ends leaves a sour taste in everyone's mouth because it just felt like a movie we've seen before.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there. Like, it – overall, I think, like, the week in Vegas and participating in the crown was a net positive for them.
Yeah.
Just because you get those extra practices in, you get an opportunity to kind of continue building some chemistry and some momentum for some of these guys that are returning or guys that you're hoping to retain this year, whether it's an Xavier Brown, Darion Reed. We saw him really step his game up, you know, the last month of the season. You know, even seeing some guys like Koala Tak get a little bit more run in Vegas, or Kai Rogers, who I think showed some really good things. It's like, okay, now you have a little bit better idea of what you have in these guys, getting a chance to play against other high major programs in, you know, high stakes postseason basketball and what they can do and where you feel their roles can fit in going into next year. So I think it was overall a net positive because they played some really good basketball, even in the loss yesterday. Like, yeah, the ending is going to leave a bad taste in your mouth, but the resiliency that they showed in the first half, I thought was very much like an encapsulation of what the last 2 months have been for this team. They just took haymaker after haymaker early on there. I mean, West Virginia could not miss.
Honor Huff. What the heck?
Yeah. Honor Huff, man. Like, started 5 of 5 from deep.
Crazy.
As a team, they were 8 of 10 from beyond the arc. And what was it, 10, you know, 10 of 13 overall, but then Oklahoma held them to 2 of 17 and 0 of 8 from deep for the last 9 minutes of the first half to take the lead into the break. And, you know, they come out playing well out of halftime, you know, build the lead up to 12. West Virginia starts coming back and it gets kind of tight there. But, you know, you have a 7-point lead with about 3.5 minutes left, and you just couldn't hold on to it. And you start to see like some flashbacks to some of those January losses. And you're like, this again. And, you know, look, credit to Oklahoma. They were able to survive that little comeback at the end of regulation and force overtime. You know, Tate Davis hitting a tough layup in the lane there. And they came out in overtime, scored the first 6 points. And you're thinking, man, they're going to pull this one out. And then, you know, Nigel Pack can't hold on to a rebound. It goes out of bounds. And, you know, West Virginia gets a 3-pointer after that. Then Pack gets blocked on a drive to the basket, and Honor Huff hits another 3-pointer in transition. It's a tie game, and all of a sudden things get shaky, and West Virginia just kind of pulls away down the stretch there. There were things that Oklahoma certainly could have done better. Like you said, there was some of those, you know, late game situations that they just didn't execute well, some costly turnovers, some missed open looks. But I think also, like, you have to give West Virginia a lot of credit. Like, Honor Huff, 38 points, 8 of 15 from beyond the arc. That is ridiculous. They got some really good play from Chance Moore, especially in the second half. His ability to attack the paint and get to the line really got West Virginia back in the game after they fell behind by a dozen. And then Jasper Floyd hit a couple of big shots there in overtime as well. So Oklahoma is not blameless, but I think a lot of credit goes to the way West Virginia played down the stretch as well.
For sure. Just stings to let the lead slip away. And they did it against Colorado, too. Colorado went a 7-0 run to end regulation to force overtime in that game. But they were able to weather it and take the overtime. And, like, to your point, it looked like they were doing the same thing yesterday where they get that lead. And, you know, Nigel Pack played really well down the stretch. You hate it for him, all the seniors, but especially Pack. I don't know. He's just been in college so long. And he had a good week out there. I'm sure he's, you know, gonna live. Like, you know, it's the crown championship game. You don't want to overstate what it was. You want to go out with a win, obviously, and the money is relevant. They made $100,000, but it could have tripled that if they had won yesterday. So, you know, it was a good week overall. I definitely thought it was very interesting just how much Koala talk and Kai Rogers we got, especially Kai. I mean, because it felt like just a lost year for him, and he played a lot. And yesterday he played a lot. I don't think Kirill played at all, Elatan said.
I don't think Kirill played in any of the three games.
He definitely played on Wednesday because Tim Brando said his name horrifically. That's the only reason I remember. He played a little bit on Wednesday, I'm certain. But Kai played, was basically the backup too, five all week. So kind of interesting. Will he be back around next year? I don't know. Koala talk, I don't know. Dayton Forsythe, I don't know. I think Xavier Brown's going to be back. We talked about that last week, just the way that he kind of talked, but I don't know, Darian Reed. I mean, you can't assume anything. I mean, you can't. I mean, in any sport, but especially in hoops. I mean, we've talked about it at length every year. It's been a new team. And so can you have that five back and then go in the portal and go get some legit players? Because if you do, I feel like you have a chance to have a decent roster, but I don't know. You know, so it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting. You know, Xavier Brown, like you said, he made it sound like he was going to come back when we spoke to him last week. And again, you have to keep in mind his stepfather is, you know,
that helps.
It's on the staff. Like that relationship is obviously key. Darion Reed, Neil Porter talked last week a lot about how they spent the last couple of weeks of practice just kind of talking about what Darion's elevated role will look like next season. And you have to think that if he comes back, it's like him and Xavier Brown are kind of your foundational pieces. I think you'd love to keep Kai Rogers. I was impressed with what he showed, especially those last two games. Because you think back to early in the season, and even the start of SEC play, he just looked lost at times out there. Mm-hmm. But I think in Vegas, he looked a little bit more assertive, looked more sure of himself, and was able to affect the game on both ends of the floor. Did a really good job rebounding. Was great as a rim runner. Had a couple nice blocks and an outlet pass to Darion Reed for a dunk in that Baylor game. Dayton Forsythe, obviously a local guy, you'd love to have back as, you know, I don't know if he would be a starting guard next year because I'd like to see what you can get in the portal. But I think he can be a really good, you know, sixth man for you off the bench. And then Kualatat, he still needs to develop some, I think. Obviously an elite shooter.
Right.
Think he still needs to get a little bit more muscle there. I liked some of the attacking that he showed at times in the season. Like we saw that dunk against Baylor. You know, he had another one. What game was that? Georgia, where he had that ridiculous dunk?
I can't remember.
But like he's got the athleticism.
That's the game I didn't really see a lot of.
Yeah, but he's got some of that athleticism and obviously a quick release and a high release on his shot. But yeah, you look at him defensively, he finished this season as, you know, statistically their worst defensive player. I think he had the worst defensive rating, the worst defensive box plus minus. And you watch him out there, he just needs to improve his lateral quickness. Too often you see guys just kind of turn the corner on him where he can't get his feet over quick enough. So I think if he can improve in that area, you have something that, like, another, you know, rotational piece that you can really work with there. But again, in a perfect world, you're able to keep all five of these guys.
Yeah.
And I think you really need to prioritize Xavier, Darion, and probably Kai. I think need to be your top three priorities. As good as Dayton Forsyth can be for you off the bench, I think having a difference maker of a big man, especially in the SEC, is something that Oklahoma needs and just has not had. You look at, you know, some of their best basketball was when Mo Agee was playing at a high level. Mm-hmm. And they just have not gotten that a lot over the last few years. So if you think Kai Rodgers can be that big and maybe add another big in the portal too, I think that would go a long way toward next year. But they've got at least five spots on this roster that they need to fill, and maybe more depending on who exits.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, you can't teach size. Obviously, and Kai has that. And you're losing Wagee and you're losing Kirill. And I did look, by the way, Kirill played 8 minutes against Colorado. That was it. That was all he played all week. After that, it was all Kai. And so, you know, I don't know if that was just to get more of an extended look at him or for the new GM we're talking about in a second, or just to kind of show, like, we do want you to be a part of this. I don't know, you know, where that comes from.
It's a little bit of everything.
Yeah, a little bit of everything, I guess. But yeah, I agree. I mean, perfect world, I think you would have all five back, but that's probably not reality. But maybe it is. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it is a new era, hopefully. I mean, it's still Porter Moser, but it's Roger Denny. It's the new GM coming in. Like, it, maybe you can retain some of these guys and try to build out from there. I mean, Xavier Bryan and Darion Reed are must-haves. Mm-hmm. But then I like Kualatat just because of the upside, just with his length and his shooting. You would think, like, there's got to be a way to use this guy. You can see what he can do when he gets it rolling. I like Dayton Forsyth as a bench PG. Like you start about with Kai, you don't have to replace all your bigs, you know, you're like trying to get one. So I don't know. We'll see. It's going to be interesting all season, which basically starts really, obviously it's kind of already started, but really, really tomorrow with the portal. So the portal opens tomorrow and we'll see what happens with guys leaving. And when they do it, Oklahoma's going to have a new general manager. Or a general manager, I should say, not new, just a, they didn't have one before. Lucas McKay from Clemson is coming over to be the general manager at Oklahoma. Now, obviously, Trey Young is the assistant GM, so I don't know what role he'll play. Obviously, Trey was key in getting some of these guys last year, especially like a Nigel Pack and an Xavier Brown. I assume he'll be involved again. But Lucas McKay comes in from Clemson. Tom, you wrote the story. I'm not going to pretend, either of us, that like home run hire or what are they doing, right? I mean, it's a basketball GM. It's a pretty new thing. It's the first one Oklahoma's literally ever had. I will just say this, and I'll turn it to you. It's a pretty comparable – I mean, Clemson and Oklahoma seem like pretty similar programs. I mean, right? I mean, it's a football-first school. Clemson, you know, not a ton of basketball tradition. Certainly Oklahoma has more than Clemson does. But Clemson, been a pretty good program. I mean, they pretty consistently in the tournament.
Hang on.
They made that run. Was it a few years ago? Or they went
3 years ago. Yep.
Where they lost Alabama. So, I mean, pretty consistently competitive program. It's kind of what Oklahoma's trying to be. Like, just nobody's looking for top 10 every year, but, you know, have a big run like that. Be consistently in the tournament. Hang around the top 25. That's what Clemson is. So it's at least pretty comparable from that regard in terms of, like, the job for Lucas McKay. What do you know about him? What do you think? You know, this is the first kind of real Roger Denny move to go get Porter Moser a GM to work with to try and navigate this offseason. Kind of, you know, kind of interesting. Interesting move here from Oklahoma. I'm curious to see how it shakes out, how it works out.
Yeah, I'm not going to pretend to think that this is like some home run hire. Like, getting in the weeds to it. Lewis McKay, he's been around Clemson a lot, and I think he's been with Brad Brunell like 14 years. He had a 2-year stint at University of Missouri Kansas City, the Kangaroos, who they came to Norman this year, right?
They did. I think they're just the Ruse.
Okay, the Ruse.
Their logo,
sick logo. Cool uniforms. We spent a couple years there as an assistant coach before returning to Clemson. He's been their director of recruiting. This year he added the GM title. Clemson's had some good classes. I think they were top 30-ish portal or composite class last year, maybe. But he's a guy that he's obviously got a little bit of familiarity with the region from his time at Kansas City. Like you said, it's kind of a comparable program and a guy that just is going to help with roster management. Because like you said, they added Trey Young in that assistant role, but really like how deeply involved is Trey Young really when he is a professional NBA player?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I think a lot of the responsibilities of a GM kind of fell to Tad Gilbert, the chief of staff. But now you have a guy who's going to be, it's going to be his job to help manage this roster and, navigate the portal over these next 2 weeks. And obviously you bring him in, over the weekend. So can kind of, get his feet under him before the madness of the portal begins. But this is going to be a pivotal time for him and for Porter Moser these next, 2 weeks, as they try to bolster this roster and get it to where, look, they had a NCAA tournament caliber roster this year. Yeah. They just fell short. That January stretch was brutal. They need a roster again that can not only compete but get them on the other side of that cut line that they've been living on for the last 5 years. Obviously they made the tournament last year, but 3 of the other 4 years there they've been either the first team out or one of the first four out. And obviously some of that is on coaching, but a lot of that is just on talent. And we heard Roger Denny say need to invest more resources, like the resources need to match the expectations for the program, and then the coaching needs to elevate it beyond that, where you're not just making the NCAA tournament, but you are competitive and trying to make it into the second weekend or maybe having an occasional deep run. So it's going to be a key 2 weeks Lucas McKay and Porter as they try to figure out what this roster is going to look like. And we'll see what that investment looks like. I don't think we're going to get any hard numbers anytime soon. Sure. But you look at last year where they clearly made a boost in what they were doing with the NIL to be able to land the number 11 portal class and get guys like Xavier Brown and Darion Reed and Tay Davis. So we'll see. We'll see how that works out.
Yeah, it's gonna be a super interesting offseason. And the sick part is that it sounds like the tournament's probably gonna expand. They would have made it several times under Porter if they had done this, and this year's team would have made it if they had done the expansion 76 teams, which sounds inevitable. Which is a whole separate convo as far as like should they be doing that? Obviously, they probably should not, but it's gonna make more money, so that's what they're gonna do. That's kind of the sick part is that they would have made it this year and several times under Porter. It's like, where was this change 5 years ago? It would have been huge for OU. And we'll see what happens. It just does suck. We're going to do our job in that we're going to cover the team. We're going to talk about the team. We're going to have the offseason. We'll do what we do. And there's a lot of OU basketball fans that are diehards that appreciate it. But the casual fan is going to be all the way out until January or February. I mean, they're going to have to start next season well and prove it for a while because you're bringing Porter back. And I don't know if winning the crown would have made that big a difference, but it would have helped. But literally the last memory of this year is kind of another late, and so it's going to be hard to win the fans over next year, like really hard, even harder than normal. And so a big Porter class would help, get some buzz going, but it's going to be just a massive offseason, obviously, for Oklahoma. Again, another really big offseason. They got to find a way to get this thing going. Big year coming up, and excited to maybe hear from Lucas McKay at some point. I don't know. I mean, Jim Nagy, obviously, on the football side, talked a few times. Maybe that happens. I don't know. But just interesting. Interesting offseason. The portal opens tomorrow. Obviously, Tom and I will be discussing the portal, I imagine, pretty regularly on the show here for the next month or so as they have guys maybe leave and bring guys in and – we'll see what happens. Obviously, very big offseason. getting underway again, really this week, but especially tomorrow with the portal opening. Real quick as well, I want to just throw it in there on the women's side. Zaya Van going to enter the portal for the women's team. So that's going to be three starters they have to replace now because Reagan Beers and Peyton Verhulst are graduating. So that's a big loss for Jenny B. And I'm not going to pretend to know all the dynamics of it. It seemed like it was somewhat unexpected, but another starter you have to replace there. So a big offseason for them as well because they're losing a lot of key pieces, and we'll see if they can, you know, put more players around Aaliyah Chavez, you know, to next year to try and get to that next level. So big poor departure for them. Want to make sure to note that as well on the program. All right, so we go to the diamond before we get out of here. Let's start with softball, Tom. Swept Kentucky. Kendall Wells just keeps hitting homers. It's unbelievable. She's up to 30 homers. Already has the freshman record. At the current rate, she's going to shatter the single season record. I mean, just going to demolish it as a freshman. I believe it's 37 is the record, and she's at 30. It's obviously first week of April. Like, if they go the distance, which they probably will, she has two more months of games. Like, it's unbelievable what they're doing. You obviously covered the game, Sports Eastern Illustrated. So we should feel free to wrap up and try to, you know, put in perspective what Kendall Wells is doing if you want to attempt it. But the big thing is that they have the series with Texas now coming up this week. Obviously, we've been waiting for this. We've been circling it. I feel like I brought it up myself on the show the last like 3 weeks of like, just get me to that Texas series. Not to take for granted what they're doing, but these SEC teams they've played, Kentucky's not as good as them. Texas is. Texas is the defending champs. They're ranked number one. It's down in Austin. I'm very much looking forward to this weekend, but obviously another dominant weekend, but now the really big test comes up going down to Austin. I'm very much looking forward to seeing how they handle it down there.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard to put into words what Kendall Wells has been able to do. Again, like, she hit her 30th home run on April 4th.
It's dumb.
One in every game against Kentucky. They got another sweep, all three of the wins, run rule. Just really impressive stuff from her. And you have to wonder, like, at some point, our team's going to stop pitching to her. Like, do you pitch around her? Because it's hard when the lineup is kind of as stacked as it is. And having her in that two spot is, you kind of afford her some protection with, you know, like Gabby Garcia or Ella Parker or Cassidy Pickering, like, looming right behind her. And all of them have, you know, 15-plus home runs each, too. Right. So I think she's going to keep getting her opportunities unless some teams just kind of get bold and, you know, try to pitch around her and then roll the dice with, you know, the more veteran hitters that are in that lineup. But what she's done has been remarkable at this point. And a lot of these home runs, like, they're not just like edging over the wall. Like, no, she is crushing balls right now. Moonshots, some of them even going out of Love's Field. It's just remarkable. Like, you don't see this kind of hitter as a true freshman. She's kind of been one of one right now, and it's been truly impressive. And when you know, you look at the team overall, I mean, Kai Minor continues to be a revelation at the top of the lineup there in the leadoff spot. You know, your veterans are delivering too. And when the offense is kind of clicking like this, like, you don't need elite pitching, but you're still getting good stuff from Audrey Lowry and Molly Guacheno. And I think you got a really promising start from Sydney Berzon over the weekend. I mean, four hitless innings before, you know, she came out. So you'd love the pitching to just be reinforced a little bit more for when you're playing a team like a Texas or some of these other teams that are still looming down the, you know, backstretch of the season. But you got to think they got some real good confidence right now heading into that series in Austin.
For sure. And look, hand up, I'll admit, I was someone who the power numbers were so insane, but it was like, you know, and again, the SEC play is going to pick up. It picks up this weekend, but I definitely was of the kind of the thought of like, it'll slow down a little when they get an SEC play, and it hasn't at all. Right. I mean, Kendall Wells and the whole team, I mean, they have the most homers in the country by miles. Like, they're way out there. I saw the stat this weekend, like, just OU freshmen alone would be like the fifth most of any team. Like, it's hard to fully appreciate what they're doing, truly. Yeah. So it's been awesome. It's been crazy to see. Shout out Jen Rocha back in the dugout, by the way, as well. Awesome to see her be able to be back with the team. And you know, helping. Obviously, she's a huge part of this thing. And so that was really cool to see. Vibes are high. I mean, they're playing really well. And now you go down to Austin. It's a 1-3. Texas, the defending champ. Obviously, OU won the 4 championships before that. And it's gonna be awesome. I think I can't remember. I want to say Sunday's on national TV on ESPN. I can't remember the other two, but probably all on national TV if I had to guess. And it's a huge series. I mean, it'd be fun to watch. I mean, I don't always get to watch them that much because I'm covering baseball all the time. But this weekend, baseball's on the road, and so I will have all these games on, and I look forward to watching them because they're going to be – it's a national championship-level matchup this weekend. So it's going to be fun to watch and see what they do down there. Always fun when Patty and Mike White get together. There always seems to be some spiciness to it, so it'll be fun.
Friday's game, ESPN2, Saturday and Sunday on ESPN.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, that's you know, a whole softball series to be on national TV like that. That goes to tell you where that thing is. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Looking forward to it starting on Friday night. As for the across the street there, across Jenkins at Kimry, you know, not a good weekend for baseball. They're kind of scuffling right now. They lose the series at home to Alabama. You know, it's just kind of like one thing. If it's not one thing, it's another. They're kind of plugging holes right now. You know, we talked about it last week. Down in Austin, the bullpen, which had been so good, was not and let a couple of leads slip away down there in Austin. This weekend against Alabama, the bullpen was fine. In fact, it was quite good again. It was really good, actually. But the offense just isn't humming. You know, some bats that they were really counting on coming into the year are just not – you know, they're not rolling right now. And Skip talked about it. I think it was maybe after the Saturday game, the finale, just having confidence. I think there's a little bit of a confidence issue offensively right now. You know, Jason Walk has not had a great year. Kyle Branch has not had a good year. You know, Dayton LeChance has had a solid year, but this was a guy that was expected to provide a lot of power for OU. He has no homers. You know what I mean? He's no homers this year. Jackson Waltz had a pretty good year, maybe not to what he would want though. You know, Brendan Brock was awesome early. He's cooled off. Like, they just don't have a lot of bats that you feel really confident right now are gonna do it for you. And now, like, Alec Blair, great freshman season. He had a, you know, kind of a rough weekend after he hit a homer on Thursday. But then he kind of, you know, it's like they can't seem to get anyone rolling, certainly not a few guys at once. And so runs have been a little hard to come by. And Elgin Mercurius got shelled again on Thursday. That's 2 weeks in a row for him out of nowhere. I mean, he was – unbelievable the first 2 months, back-to-back weeks where he has a really rough go of it. Don't know if he's – I don't know. I'm not going to pretend to be able to assess what the problem is, but a lot of hard contact. I mean, Alabama was hunting early in the count and just hitting rockets everywhere. After that, the pitching was pretty good. But, again, the offense just having a hard time getting going right now. So, you know, you don't want to overreact too much, but you can't – you know, losing series at home is tough. If you're trying to host – they're in a tough spot for hosting right now, not going to lie. Still a long way to go. 5-7 in the SEC. This is where getting swept by Texas really hurts, too. If you could have got one, you'd be 500 right now. You feel like you're still right there. I still think this is a pretty good team, but there's definitely just, you know, there's some questions right now. We'll see what they do this week. They're down in Dallas Baptist tonight. It's a Monday night game, which is really weird. And then they go Thursday to Saturday at Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt, not the normal Vanderbilt. It's a road series that I would think is pretty gettable, relatively speaking. If you can go win 2 out there, I think you feel a lot better, you know, moving forward, because you have Missouri coming in next weekend. Missouri's terrible. You have to be shooting for a sweep over Missouri. So if you can go win the series at Vandy and then sweep Missouri, you feel like you're kind of back in solid shape going kind of into the home stretch. But, yeah, I mean, Tom, this will happen in the SEC, right? I mean, there's just no room for – you know, you're kind of scuffling a little bit and you're going to get burned. And it's not even like, I mean, they lost by 3 runs on Thursday, 1 run yesterday. They won. It's not like they're not competitive or in these games, but the margins are small. And right now they're just not quite buttoned up enough to win series against these good teams right now.
Yeah. You just kind of, you know, try to find a way to stabilize. And, you know, like you're still in that discussion to host
for sure
regional. And that's like obviously you'd like to get into the top 8. But as long as you can just kind of stabilize these next couple weeks and kind of find your footing and just keep yourself in contention there to host that first weekend, you're going to feel pretty good.
Yeah, and Saturday, you know, Friday or Thursday, LJ gets lit up, and Skip talked about it post game where they were just on everything, and they have to figure out where they're going wrong there with him. But they kind of crawl back into that game. They win on Friday. Cam Johnson looked really good again. So that's 2 weeks in a row where Cam has looked like himself again. And then Saturday is the one that's going to really sting, because they essentially handed them 3 runs in the first inning, Alabama, and lost 3-2. I mean, the 3 runs came on a wild pitch, a pass ball, and an error, and an E8 in center, just all with 2 outs, like just pain. And you lose 3-2. That's tough to stomach. And Cord Rager had lat soreness, so he was a late scratch on Saturday. That's huge. You need him. They had to kind of bullpen the game, which, again, the pitching was fine. The pitching wasn't the problem, but you're going to need Cord Rager over the course of the rest of the season. So, you know, definitely they're facing some adversity right now. And this happens. It's happened before. I certainly some of the best OU teams I've covered, like in 22 or in 24, went through patches like this where it was kind of like, oh, boy. And then you just keep grinding. You pull out of it. You can get hot. It can flip quick in baseball. But obviously, tough weekend, no doubt about it, at home. And Skip said as much himself on Saturday. Just kind of felt they gave the third game away, which is hard to stomach, obviously. So we'll see what happens. Dallas Baptist and then Vanderbilt this week. 4 games on the road starting tonight. A very, again, Monday game. Very odd, but that's what we got coming up this evening. All right, I think that's it. We'll be back with Colin. I think we're going to shoot for Friday because there's football stuff on Tuesday and Thursday. So kind of a rare Friday show, I believe, coming your way. Tom and I'll be back next Monday, and we'll kind of set the table for the spring game, of course, kind of so a little bit of a spring game preview there. And then also the hoops portal will have been open and rolling. We'll get into that, Diamond Sports, all that good stuff, and a lot more spring ball coverage to come this week. Brent Venables tomorrow, practice Thursday, a lot of players throughout the week as well. So be sure to be plugged in, both on the YouTube channel, of course, as well, or on the site. Tom, any final thoughts from you on anything? You need to get out there?
Nope.
You have the best championship pick, Michigan, UConn. Michigan's a boat.
Yeah, Michigan's just a wagon right now.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, unbelievable. They've been so good.
I was hoping for an all-time game on Saturday, and they just, nope, none of that. Just demolished Arizona. Be plugged into that tonight, Michigan and UConn. I tend to think Michigan might win pretty soundly as well.
I really enjoy watching Yaxel Lannenborg play.
I would not hate him on Thunder down the road, to be honest.
I would not hate him on the Heat. So, but no, I very much enjoyed him when he was at UAB, and obviously getting a chance to get to a bigger program and, you know, secure a bag for himself this year. He's really made the most of it. And he's just fun to watch, man.
Yeah, Dusty May, really good coach. And he was a candidate for North Carolina, which, by the way, North Carolina hiring Michael Malone. Did you see that? Insane.
Not
Denver Nuggets, former Denver Nuggets coach. Not Billy B. Crazy stuff. College hoops offseason about to get revved up, I think, big time. Really starting tomorrow, obviously. So fun stuff. Anyway, that's it. We'll be back with Colin on Friday, Tom and I on Monday. Spring ball coverage all week. That's it for now. For Tom Green, I'm Josh Calloway. We'll see you guys next time right back here, as always, on Sooners Illustrated.